Lucien, the boy says, trying to sound manly. He seems to think Pax is in charge. Pax booms a laugh and points to me and my sling blade. Lucien flinches when he looks at me. I think he well knew I was the leader.
So we here to swap smiles? I ask. What's your word?
The word is hunger. He laughs piteously. We've not eaten anything but rats and raw grain and water for 3 weeks. I almost pity the boy. His hair is dirty, eyes teary. He knows he's giving up a chance at an apprenticeship. They'll shame him for surrendering for the rest of his life. But he's hungry. So are the 7 other defenders. Oddly, all are of Jupiter, not slaves. The Primus left their weak instead of the slaves behind. The only condition they have in surrendering the castle is that they must not be enslaved. Only Pax grumbles something honourable about them needing to earn their freedom like all the rest of us, but I agree to the boy's request. I tell Milia to watch them. If they act seditious, she'll make trophies of their scalps. We tether our horses in the courtyard. The stone is cobbled and dirty. A tall, angular keep stretches up and into the cliff's wall. Darkness seeps through the clouds. The storm is coming to the mountain pass, so I bring my force into the castle and bar the gates. Mustang and her troop stay beyond the walls and will return later in the evening from scouting with Tactus. We speak over the comm units, and Tactus curses us for having a dry roof over our heads. The night's rain is heavy. I make sure our veterans get the first beds in Jupiter's dormitories before we eat. My army may be disciplined, but they'll shiv their own mothers for a warm bed. It's the one thing most of them never got used to, sleeping on the ground. They miss their mattresses and silk sheets. I miss the small cot I used to share with Io. She's been dead now, longer than we were married. I'm surprised how much it hurts to realize that. I think I'm 18 now. Earth metric. Not rightly sure. Our bread and meats are like heaven to the starved defenders of Jupiter. Lucien and his lot, all skinny, tired-looking souls, eat so fast that Nyla is fussing about them ripping their guts. She runs around telling each of them that the smoked horse meat isn't galloping off anywhere. Pax and his bloodbacks occasionally throw bones at the meek lot. Pax's laugh is infectious. It booms out of him, and then turns into something feminine as it continues past 2 seconds. No one can keep a straight face when he gets rolling. He's talking about Helga again. I look for Mustang so we can laugh about it, but she'll be away for hours more. I miss her, even then. And I swell a little inside my chest because I know she will curl into my bed this night, and together we'll snore like Uncle Narol after Yuletide. I call Milia to the head of the table. My army lounges around Jupiter's war room. They are easy in conquest. Jupiter's map is destroyed. I cannot make out what they know. What do you think of our host? I ask Milia.
I say, put them under the sigil.
I cluck my tongue. You really don't like to keep promises, do you? She looks very much like a hawk, face all angles and cruelty. Her voice is of a similar breed.
Promises are just chains, she rasps, both meant for breaking.
I tell her to leave the Jupiterians alone, and then loudly command her to fetch the wine we scavenged on our trek to Jupiter. She takes some boys and brings up the barrels from Bacchus's store. I stand foolishly on the table.
And I order you to get drunk!
I roar to my army. They look at me like I'm mad.
Get drunk? One says.
Yes.
I cut him off before he can say more.
Can you manage that? Act like fools for once. We'll try, Milia cries, won't we?
She's answered in cheers.
Sometime later, as we drink Bacchus's stores, I loudly offer some to the Jupiterians. Pax stumbles up in protest at the idea of sharing good wine. He's a good actor.
Are you contradicting me? I demand.
Pax hesitates but manages to nod his giant head. I draw my sling blade from its back scabbard. It rasps in the humid warroom air. 100 eyes go to us. Thunder rolls outside. Pax wobbles forward with a giant inebriated step. His own hand is on his axe's hilt, but he does not draw it. After a moment, he shakes his head and goes to a knee. He's still almost my own height. I sheathe my sword and pull him up. I tell him he's to run patrols.
Patrols? But in the storm and rain?
You heard me, Pax.
With a grumble, the Bloodbacks wobble after him to go about their punishment. They're all smart enough to have figured out their parts, even if they don't know the play.
Discipline! I brag to Lucien. Discipline is the best of mankind's traits, even in big brutes like that. But he's right. No wine for you tonight. That you must earn.
In Pax's absence, I make a show of giving ceremonial wolf cloaks to the slaves of Venus and Bacchus who earned their freedom in taking this fortress. Ceremonial because we don't have any time to find wolves. There is laughter and lightness. Merriment, for once, though no one discards their weapons. Nyla is coaxed into singing a song. Her voice is like an angel's. She sings at the Mars Opera House, and was scheduled to perform in Vienna, until a better opportunity came along in the form of the Institute. The opportunity of a lifetime. What a lark. Lucien sits in the corner of the war room with the other 7 defenders, watching our soldiers make a show of falling asleep atop tables, in front of the fire, along the walls. Some slink away to steel beds. The sound of snores tickles my ears. Severo stays close to me, as though the proctors could rush in and kill me at any moment. I tell Severo to get drunk and leave me be. He obeys, and is soon laughing, then snoring atop the long table. I stumble over my sleeping army to Lucien, a smile across my face. I have not been drunk since before my wife died. Despite Lucien's meekness, I find him curious. His eyes rarely meet mine, and his shoulders slump. But his hands never go to his trouser pockets, never fold to guard himself. I ask him about the war with Mars. As I thought, it's almost won. He says something about a girl betraying Mars. Sounds like Antonia to me. I must move quickly. I don't know what will happen if my house's standard and castle are taken, even though I have my independent army. I could, technically, lose. Lucien's friends are tired, so I give them leave to go try to find beds. They won't be a problem. Lucien stays to talk. I invite him over to the war room table. As Lucien's friends file out, I hear Mustang in the hall. She waltzes into the room. Thunder rolls outside. Her hair is damp and matted, wolf cloak soaked, boots tracking mud. Her face is a model of confusion when she sees me with Lucien.
Mustang, darling, I cry. I fear you're too late. Went straight through Bacchus's stores already.
A gesture to my snoring army and wink. Maybe 50 remain, sprawled out in various states of sleep across the large war room. All drunk as ne'er all on Yuletide.
Getting shit-faced seems a prime idea at a time like this, she says strangely.
She looks back to Lucien, then to me. She doesn't like something. I introduce her to Lucien. He mumbles how nice it is to meet her. She snorts a laugh.
How did he convince you not to make him a slave, Dara?
I don't know if she understands what game I'm playing. He gave me his fortress. I wave my clumsy hand to the half-destroyed stone map on the wall. Mustang says she will join us. She begins to call some of her men in from the hall, but I cut her off. No, no. Me and Lucien here were becoming prime friends. No girls. Take your men and go find Pax. But go find Pax, I command. I know she's confused, but she trusts me. She murmurs goodbye to me and Lucien, and closes the door. The sound of her boot heels slowly fades. Thought she'd never leave, I laugh to Lucien. He leans back in his chair. He really is very slim, nothing excess to him at all. His blonde hair is clipped plainly, his hands thin and useful. He reminds me of someone. Most people don't want pretty girls to leave, Lucien says, smiling sincerely. He even blushes a little when I ask if he really thinks Mustang is pretty. We talk for nearly an hour. Gradually, he lets himself relax. He lets his confidence grow, and soon he is telling me of his childhood, of a demanding father, of family expectations. But he's not pitiful when he does this. He's realistic, a trait I admire. It's no longer necessary for him to avoid my eyes when we talk. His shoulders don't hunch quite so much, and he becomes pleasant, even funny. I laugh loudly half a dozen times. The night grows late, but we still talk and joke. He laughs at the boots I wear, which are swaddled in animal furs for warmth. They are hot now that the snow melts, but I need to wear the pelts. But what of you, Darrow? We gab and gab over me. I think it's your turn. So tell me, what is it that's taken you here? What pushes you? I don't think I've heard of your family. Not people you would care to hear about, to tell it true. But I think it comes down to a girl, that's all. I'm simple. So are my reasons. The pretty one, Lucien blushes. Mustang? She hardly seems simple. I shrug. I told you everything, Lucien protests. Don't be a vague purple on me. Cut to it, man. He raps the table impatiently. Fine, fine. The whole story. I sigh. See that pack beside you? There's a bag inside it. Reach and grab it for me, will you? Lucien pulls the bag out and tosses it to me. It clinks on the table. Let me see your hand. My hand? He asks with a laugh. Right, just put it out, please. I pat the table. He doesn't react. Come on, man. There's this theory I've been working on. I pat the table impatiently. He puts his hand out. How does this tell your story, or theory? His smile is still on. It's a complicated one. Better to show you. Fair enough. I open the bag and dump out its contents. A score of golden sigils roll across the table. Lucien watches them roll. These all come from the dead kids. The kids the medbots couldn't save. Let's see. I shuffle through the pile of rings. We have Jupiter, Venus, Neptune, Bacchus, Juno, Mercury, Diana, Ceres. We might have a Minerva right here. I frown and rummage around. Odd. I can't find a Pluto. I look up at him. His eyes are different. Dead. quiet.
Oh, there's one.
Chapter 41. The Jackal. He jerks back his hand. He is fast. I am faster. I bury my dagger through his hand, pinning it to the table. His mouth gasps open at the pain. Some weird sort of feral exhalation hisses from his mouth as he jerks at the dagger. But I am bigger than him, and I drove the dagger 4 inches into the table. I hammer it down with a flagon. He can't pull it out. I lean back and watch him try. There's something primal to his initial frenzied panic. Then something decidedly human in his recovery, which seems more brutally cold than my act of violence. He calms himself faster than anyone I've ever seen. It takes a breath, maybe three, and he leans back in his chair, as though we were at drinks.
Well, shit, he says tightly.
I thought we should become better acquainted, I say. I point to myself. Jackal, I am Reaper. You've a better name, he replies. He takes a breath. Another. How long have you known? That you were the Jackal? A hopeful guess. That you were up to no good, before I entered the castle. No one surrenders without a fight. One of your rings didn't fit. And hide your hands next time. Insecure sobs always hide or fiddle with their hands. But really, you had no chance. The proctors knew I was coming here. They thought to make it a trap to ruin me by telling you I was coming, so you would sneak in here, try to catch me with my pants down. Their mistake. Your mistake. He watches me, wincing as he turns to look at my sober-as-day soldiers rising from the ground. Nearly 50 of them. I wanted them to see the ruse. Ah. The Jackal sighs as he sees how futile his trap has become. My soldiers? Which ones? The ones that were with you, or the ones you hid in the castle? Maybe in the cellars? Maybe beneath the floor in a tunnel? I don't wager their smiles and giggles right now, man. Pax is a beast, and Mustang will be helping him just in case.
So that's why you sent her away.
And so she wouldn't accidentally ask why we were pretending to be drunk on grape juice. Pax will have found their hiding place. Thunder still rolls. I hope the Jackal sank a large size of his force into this ambush. If he didn't, it'll be a hassle. Because if he has Jupiter's castle, he probably has Jupiter's army, which has Juno and much of Vulcan, and soon Mars's. But I have him here. The Jackal is pinned, bleeding, and surrounded by my army. His ambush undone. He has lost, but he is not helpless. He is no longer Lucian. It's almost like his hand isn't impaled. His voice doesn't waver. He's not angry, just pissing your boots scary. He reminds me of me before I go into a rage. Quiet. Unhurried. I wanted my soldiers to see him squirm. He doesn't. So I tell them to leave. Only the 10 howlers, old and new, stay.
If we're to have a conversation, please take this dagger out of my hand.
The Jackal says to me. Believe it or not, it hurts. He is not as playful as his words suggest. Despite his resolve, his face is pale, and his body has begun to tremble from shock. I smile. Where is the rest of your army? Where is that girl, Lilith? She owes my friend an eye. Let me go, and I will give you her head on a platter if you want, If you lend me an apple, I'll even put that in her mouth so she looks like a pig at feast. Your choice. There. Now that's how you got your name, isn't it? I say with mocking applause. The jackal clicks his tongue regrettably. Lilith liked the sound of it. It stuck. That's why I'll put the apple in her mouth. Wish I could have been something more regal than jackal, but reputations tend to make themselves. He nods to several, like the little goblin there, and his toadstools.
What do you mean, toadstools?
Thistle asks. That's what we call you. Toadstools for Reaper and Goblin to squat on. But if you would like a better name beyond this little game, you need simply kill Big Nasty Reaper here. Don't stun him. Kill him. Drive a sword into his spine, and you can become imperators, governors, whatever. Father will be happy to oblige. Very simple stuff. Quid pro quo. Severo pulls out his knives and glares at his howlers. Not so simple. Thistle doesn't move. Worth a try, the jackal sighs. I confess, I am a politico, not a fighter. So, if we're to converse, you must say something, Reaper. You look like a statue. I don't speak statue. His charisma is cold, calculating. Did you really eat your own house members? After months in darkness, you eat whatever your mouth finds, even if it's still moving. It isn't very impressive, really. Less human than I would have liked, very much like animals. And anyone would have done it. But dredging up my foul memories is no way to negotiate. We aren't negotiating. Humans are always negotiating. That's what conversation is. Someone has something, knows something. Someone wants something. His smile is pleasant, but his eyes... There is something wrong with him. A different soul seems to have filled his body since the time he was Lucian. I've seen actors. But this is different. It is as though he is reasonable to the point of being inhuman. Reaper, I will have my father give you whatever you like. A fleet, an army of pinks to screw, crows to conquer with, whatever. You'll have prime placement if I win this little year of schooling. If you win, there's still more schooling. Still more tests, more hardship. I hear your family is dead and poor. It will be difficult for you to rise on your own. Almost forgot I had a fake family. I will make my own laurels. Reaper, Reaper, Reaper. You think this is the end of the line? He makes a clicking sound of disgust with his tongue. Negative. Negative, Goodman. But if you let me go, then hardship. He makes a brushing motion with his free hand. Gone. My father will become your patron. Hello, command. Hello, fame. Hello, power. Just say goodbye to this. He gestures to the knife. And let your future begin. We were enemies as children. Now let us be allies as men. You're the sword. I am the pen. Dancer would want me to accept the offer. It would guarantee my survival. Guarantee my meteoric rise. I would be inside the halls of the Archgovernor's mansion. I would be near the man who killed Io. Oh, I want to accept. But then I would have to let the Proctors beat me. I'd have to let this little whorefart win and let his father smile and feel pride. I'd have to watch that smug smile spread across his bloody damn face. Slag that! They'll feel pain. The door opens, and Pax ducks into the room. A smile splits his face.
Gory fine night, Reaper, he laughs. Caught the little turds in the well, 50. Seems they had long tunnels down there like rats. Must be how they took the castle.
He slams the door and sits on the edge of the table to gnaw on a piece of leftover meat.
It was wet work. We let them come up and it was dandy fine carnage, I tell you, dandy fine. Helga would have loved it. They're all slaves now. Mustang is making them as we speak. But, oh, she's in an odd mood.
He spits out a bone.
This is him, then. The jackal. He looks pale as a red's ass.
He peers closer.
Shit! You nailed him down! I think you've taken bigger shits than him, Pax.
Severo adds.
Prime have. More colourful ones, too. He's drab as a brown.
Guard your tongue, fool.
The jackal tells Pax. It may not always be there.
Neither will your prick if you keep sassin'. Is it as small as you?
Pax booms. The jackal does not like being mocked. He stares silently at Pax before flicking his eyes back to me as a serpent might flick its tongue.
Did you know the Proctors are helping you? I ask. That they've tried to kill me.
Of course, he says with a shrug. My bounties are above average.
And you don't mind cheating? I ask.
Cheat or be cheated? No?
Familiar.
Well, they're not helping you any more. It's too late for that. Now it's time to help yourself. I stab another knife down into the table. He knows what it's for.
I once heard that if a jackal becomes trapped, it will chew off its own leg to free itself. That knife might be easier than using teeth.
His laugh is quick and short, like a bark. So, if I cut my hand off, I can leave. Is that really it?
There's the door. Pax, hold the knife down so that he doesn't cheat.
Even if he ate others, he won't do it. He can sacrifice friends and allies, but not himself. He will fail this test. He is an Oriot. He has no one to fear. He is small. He is weak. He is just like his father. I find his Pluto ring in his boot and put it around his finger so his drafters and father can watch their pride and joy give up. They will know I am better.
The Proctors may be nudging me, but I still have to earn it, Darrow.
We're waiting.
He sighs. I told you, I am something different than you. A hand is a peasant's tool. A gold's tool is his mind. Were you of better breeding, you may have realized this sacrifice means so very little to me.
Then he starts to cut. Tears stream down his face as the blood first wells. He's sawing, and Pax can't even watch.
The jackal is halfway done when he looks up at me with a sane smile that convinces me of his complete insanity. His teeth chatter. He is laughing. At me. At this. At the pain. I've not met anyone like him. Now I know how Mickey felt when he met me. This is a monster in the flesh of a man. The jackal is about to break his own wrist to make the job easier, when Pax curses and gives him an iron blade. It will go through in a single stroke.
Thank you, Pax,
the jackal says. I don't know what to do. Everything inside me is screaming sense. I should kill him now, put a blade through his throat. This is someone you do not let go. This is someone you do not piss on and then send back into the wild. You're so far beyond, Cassius. It makes me want to laugh. Yet I told him he could leave if he cut. And he's cutting. Dear God.
You're gory mad,
Pax breathes. The jackal mutters something about fools. It's just a hand, he says. My hands are my everything. To him, they are nothing. When he has finished, he sits there with a mostly cauterized stump. His face is like snow, but his belt is fastened into a tourniquet. There's a shared moment between us, where he knows I'm not going to let him leave. Then I see a distortion move through an open window. The proctors came, as I hoped, but I'm distracted, unprepared. And when I see a small sonic detonator clatter onto the table, and the jackal grab it with his one hand, I know I've made such a mistake. I gave the proctors time to help him. Everything slows, yet I can only watch. With the same hand that holds the tiny detonator, the jackal lashes upward with Pax's iron blade. He sticks the blade into my big friend's throat. I shout and lunge forward just as the jackal presses the detonator's button. A sonic blast rips out from the device, throwing me across the room. The howlers slam into the walls. Pax flips into the door. Cups, food, chairs scatter like rice in the wind. I am on the floor. I shake my head, trying to gain my bearings as the jackal comes toward me. Pax staggers to his feet, blood dripping from his ears, from his throat. The jackal says something to me, holds up the blade. Then Pax launches himself forward, not onto the jackal, but onto me. His weight crushes me, and his body covers mine. I can barely breathe. I do not see what happens, but I feel it through Pax's body. A shudder, a spasm, 10 impacts as the jackal stabs at Pax, trying furiously to get at me like some rabid animal digging in the dirt, digging through Pax to kill me while I'm down. Then there is nothing. Blood drips onto my face, warms my body. It is my friend's. I try to move Pax. I manage to squeeze out from under him. The jackal has fled and Pax is bleeding to death. A banshee wails in my ears. The proctors are gone as well. The howlers stumble to their feet. When I look back to Pax, he is dead. His mouth pulled into a quiet smile. Blood slithers along the stone. My own chest tightens, and I fall to a knee, sobbing. He had no last words. He had no goodbye. He threw himself upon me, and was savaged. Dead. Loyal Pax. I clutch his huge head. It hurts to see my titan fallen. He was meant for more. Such a soft heart and such a hard form. He will never laugh again. Never stand on the bridge of a destroyer. Never wear the cape of a knight or carry the scepter of an imperator. Dead. It shouldn't have been this way. It is my fault. I should have just ended things quickly. What a future he could have had. Severo stands behind me, face pale. The howlers are up and seething, 4 weep silent tears. Blood trickles from their ears, the world is soundless. We cannot hear, but a pack of wolves does not need words to know that it is time to hunt. He killed Pax. Now we kill him. The jackal's trail of blood leads to one of the keep's short spires. From there, it disappears into the courtyard. Rain has washed it away. We jump in a pack of 11 from the spire to a lower wall, rolling as we hit. Then we're down in the courtyard, and Severo,
our tracker, leads the way through a postern gate into the rugged, low mountains. The night is hard. Rain and snow sweep sideways. Lightning flashes, thunder rumbles, and I hear it as though in a dream. I run with the howlers in a staggered line. We roll over dark crags along precipitous drops in search of our quarry. My swaddled boots slow me, but they must be covered. My plan can still work, even after all this. I do not know how Severo guides us. I'm lost in the chaos. My mind is on Pax. He shouldn't have died. I cornered a jackal and let him chew his way out. I remember how Mustang looked at him. She knew who he was. She knew, and she wanted to talk to me in private. Whatever their connection, her loyalty was mine. But how does she know him? Severo takes us into the high mountain passes where snow still stacks knee-high. Tracks here. Snow flurries around us. I'm chilled. My cloak is soaked. The sling blade bounces on my back. My shoes squish, and blood dots the snow. We sprint uphill through a snowy pass between two rugged peaks. I see the jackal. He's stumbling 100 meters distant. He goes down in the snow, then he's up again. He's iron to have made it this far. We will catch him, and we will kill him for what he did to Pax. He didn't have to stab my titan. My pack begins to howl sorrowfully. The jackal looks back and stumbles on. He will not escape. We sprint up the snowy incline. Night and darkness. Wind sweeps sideways. I howl, but it is muffled after the sonic blast, like the sound has been swaddled in cotton. Then something strange distorts the flurries in front of us. A shape. An invisible, intangible shape outlined by the falling snow. A proctor. A stone sinks down into my stomach. This is where they kill me. This is what Fichtner warned me about. Apollo deactivates his cloak. He smiles at me through his helmet and calls something. I cannot hear what he says. Then he waves a pulse fist, and Severo and the howlers scatter as a tiny sonic boom blows five of our pack back down the hill. My eardrums wail. They may never be the same. Pulse fist again. I dive away. Pain lances my foot, pins me. Then the pain is gone. I'm up and sprinting at Apollo. His fist flickers a distortion of force at me. I dodge three blasts, spinning, turning like a top. I jump. My sword comes down on his head and stops cold. Pulse shield, when activated, cannot be penetrated by anything but a razor. I knew this, but there has to be some showmanship. Apollo watches me, impervious in his armor. My pack has been blasted back down the hill. I see the jackal struggling on the mountainside. He seems stronger now. A distortion follows him. Some other proctor giving him strength. Venus, I think. I scream out the rage that's been building in me since I went under Mickey's knife. Apollo says something I can't hear. I curse him and swing my blade again. He catches it and tosses it into the snow. The invisible layer of pulse shield around his fist strikes my face, never touching, yet sending agony into the nerves. I scream and fall. Then he picks me up by the hair and we rise into the storm. He soars on grav boots till we're 300 meters up. I dangle from his hand. The snow swirls around us. He speaks again, adjusting some frequency so my damaged ears can hear. I will use small words so that you are sure to understand. We have your little Mustang. If you do not lose in your next encounter with the Arch-Governor's son, so all the drafters can bear witness, then I will ruin her. Mustang. First Pax. Now the girl who sang Io's song by the fire. The girl who pulled me from the mud. The girl who curled beside me as the smoke swirled in our little cave. Brilliant Mustang, who would follow me out of choice. And this is where I led her. I did not expect this. I did not plan for this. They have her. My stomach sinks. Not again. Not like Father. Not like Io. Not like Leah. Not like Roke. Not like Pax. They will not kill her too. This son of a bitch will not kill anyone. I'm going to rip out your bloody damn heart. He punches me in the belly, still holding me by my hair. His face is strange as he tries to place the word bloody damn. We're floating in the air now. High. Very high. I dangle like a hanging man as he hits me again. I moan, but as I do, I remember one thing I learned from Fichtner as I clapped his shoulder in the woods. If Apollo was holding my hair and I do not feel his pulse shield, then it is turned off. And it is turned off over his entire body. He has physical recoil armor everywhere else, except one place. You are a stupid little puppet, I realize now, he says idly. A mad, angry little puppet. You won't do as I say, will you? He sighs. I'll find another way. Time to cut your strings. He drops me. And I float there, inches from his outstretched hand. I go nowhere because beneath fur and cloth, I'm wearing the grav boots I stole from Fichtner when I assaulted him in Apollo's war room. And Apollo's shield is down. And he's pissed me off. He gawks at me, confused. I flex the knife ring's blade out and punch him in the face, jamming the blade through his visor into his eye socket 4 times, jerking upward so that he dies. You reap what you sow! I scream at him as he fades. All the rage I felt swells in me, blinding me, and fills me with a pulsing, tangible hatred that sweeps away only as Apollo's boots deactivate, and he tumbles down through the swirling storm. I find my howlers around his body. The snow is red. They stare at me as I descend, my knife ring wet with the blood of a peerless scarred. I had not intended to kill him. But he should not have taken her, and he should not have called me a puppet. They took Mustang, I tell my pack. They look on silently. The jackal no longer matters. So now we take Olympus. The smiles they give one another are as chilling as the snow. Severo cackles. Chapter 42. War on Heaven. There is no time to waste in going back to the fortress. I have the boys and girls I need. I have the hardest of all the armies. The small, the wicked, the loyal and quick. I steal Apollo's recoil armor. The golden plate coils around my limbs like liquid. I give his grav boots to Severo, but they are ludicrously large on him. I strip off my own boots, his father's, so he can wear them. They jammed my toes something awful. I put on Apollo's boots instead. Whose are these? Severo asks me. Daddy's, I tell him. So, you guessed, Severo laughs. He's locked in Apollo's dungeons. They're stupid, Pixie, he laughs again. They have an odd relationship. I keep Apollo's razor, his helmet, his pulse fist and his pulse shield, along with his recoil armor. Severo gets the ghost cloak. I tell him to be my shadow, and then I tell my howlers to tie their belts together. Grav boots can lift a man in star shell as he carries an elephant in each arm. They are easily strong enough to lift me and my howlers, who hang from my arms and legs on belt harnesses, as I carry us through the swirling snowstorm up and up to Olympus. Severo carries the others. The Proctors have played their games. They pushed and pushed for so long. They knew I was something dangerous, something different. Sooner or later, they had to know I would snap and come to cut them down. Or perhaps they think I'm still a child. The fools. Alexander was a child when he ruined his first nation. We rise through the storm and fly over the slopes of Olympus. It floats nearly a mile above the Argos. There are no doors, no dock. Snow covers the slopes. Clouds mask its glittering peak. I lead the howlers to that bone-pale citadel at the top of the steep incline. It strikes up out of the mountain like a marble sword. Howlers unfasten their belts in pairs, dropping down on the highest balcony. We crouch on the stone terrace. From here we can see the misty lands of Mars, the rocky hills and fields of Minerva, the great woods of Diana, the mountains where my army garrisons Jupiter. I would be down there. The fools should have left well enough alone. They shouldn't have taken Mustang. I wear recoil armor of gold. It is a second skin. My face alone is exposed. I take ash from one of the howlers and streak it across my cheeks and mouth. My eyes burn with anger. Blonde hair is wild to the shoulders, unbound. I pull my sling blade and clench the shortwave pulse fist in my left. A razor hangs from my waist. I don't know how to use it. Dirt under my nails. Frostbite on my pinky and middle finger of the left hand. I stink. My cloak stinks like the dead thing it is. It hangs limp behind me. White, stained with a proctor's blood. I pull up the hood. We all do. We look like wolves. And we smell blood. The drafters better enjoy this, or I'm a dead man. We want Jupiter, I tell my howlers. Find me him. Neutralize the others if we come across any. Thistle, you take my grav boots and fetch reinforcements. Go. Barefoot, I blow open the doors with my pulse fist. We find Venus, lying in bed, in a silk shift, her armor dripping snow from its stand by the fire. She's only just returned from helping the jackal. Grapes, cheesecake, and wine are on a nightstand. The howlers pin her down, four just for effect. We tie Venus to the bedposts. Her golden eyes are wide with shock. She can hardly speak. You cannot! I am scarred! I am scarred! Is all she can manage. She says this is illegal, says she is a proctor, says we're not allowed to assault them. How did we get here? How? Who helped us? Whose armor am I wearing? Oh, it's Apollo's. It's Apollo's. Where is Apollo? A man's gentle clothing is in the corner. They are lovers. Who helped you? I helped myself, I tell her, and pat her shining hand with a dagger. How many other proctors are left? She has no words. This is not supposed to happen. It has never happened. Children do not take Olympus. Not in history on all the planets was this even thought of. We gag her anyway and leave her tied, half naked, window open so she gets a taste of the chill. The howlers and I slink through the spire. I hear Thistle bringing reinforcements. Tactus will be here to bring his own breed of wrath. And Milia will come. Nyla, soon. My army rises for Mustang. For me. For the proctors who cheated us and poisoned our food and water and cut free our horses. We go room to room, searching frigidariums, caldariums, steam rooms, ice rooms, baths, pleasure chambers filled with pinks, hollow immersion tanks, for the proctors. We take down Juno in the baths. Howlers splash in to wrestle her out. She has no weapons, but cloaked Sevrau has to stun her with a stolen scorcher after she breaks Clown's arm and starts drowning him with her legs. Apparently she did not leave like she ought to have either. All these rule breakers. Vulcan we find in a hollow immersion room, a fire crackling in the corner. He doesn't even see us come in till we turn off the machines. Vulcan was watching Cassius stand at the edge of a battlement as flaming missiles etch a smoky sky. They gave them fragging catapults. There was another screen showing the jackal stumble through the snow into a mountain cavern's mouth. Lilith greets him there with a thermal cloak and a medbot. I ask the proctors where Mustang has been taken. They say to ask Apollo or Jupiter. It isn't their concern. And it shouldn't be mine. Apparently my head is going to roll. I ask them what they will swing. I have all the axes. My army binds the proctors and we take them with us as we descend, flowing down to the next level and the level after that, like a flood of mad half-wolves. We run across high reds and brown servants and house pinks. I pay them no mind, but my army in their rabid excitement sets upon any they see. They knock down reds and absolutely obliterate any greys that make the mistake of trying to fight us. Severo has to choke out a Ceres boy who sits on a red's chest, bludgeoning in his face with scarred fists. Two greys are killed by Tactus when they try to fire on him. He dodges their scorches and breaks their necks. A squad of seven greys tries to take me down, but my pulse shield protects me from their scorches. Only if they concentrate fire and the shield overheats will I suffer. I dodge their fire and bring them down with my sling blade. My army trickles in, slowly at first, but more are coming every 4 minutes. I'm nervous. It isn't fast enough. Jupiter could destroy us, as could Pluto and whoever else is left. My army is exultant because they have me. They think me immortal, unstoppable. Already they've heard that I killed Apollo. I hear nicknames rippling like currents through the army as we swarm through the gilded vast halls. Godslayer, Sun Killer, they fancy me. But the proctors hear these things too. The ones we've captured, even the ones a little bemused by the idea of students invading Olympus, now stare at me with pale faces. They realize they're part of the game they thought they escaped many years ago, and that there are no med bots directed toward Olympus. Funny thing, watching gods realize they've been mortal all along. I send out dozens of scouts through the palace, telling them what I need. Already I can hear my plan being unwound in the halls beneath me. Jupiter, Pluto, Mercury and Minerva remain. They are coming for me. Or am I coming for them? I do not know. I try to feel like the predator, but I cannot. My rage is calming. It is slowing and giving way to fear as the halls stretch on. They have Mustang. I remind myself of the smell of her hair. These are the scarred who take bribes from the man who killed my wife. The blood pumps faster. My rage returns. I meet Mercury in a hall. He is laughing hysterically and calling out bawdy drinking songs from the HC as he faces down a half dozen of my soldiers. He wears a bathrobe but is dancing like a maniac around the sword thrusts of three dead horses. I've not seen such grace beyond the mines. He moves as I mind, fury balanced with physics, a kick, a crushing elbow, an application of force to dislocate kneecaps. He slaps one of my soldiers in the face with his hand, kicks another in the groin, and does a flip over one, grabs her hair while he is upside down, lands and slams her into the wall like a rag doll. Then he knees a boy in the face, cuts off a girl's thumb so she can't hold her sword, and tries backhanding me before dancing away. I'm faster than him, and stronger, despite his incredible gift with the razor. So as his hand goes at my face, I punch his forearm as hard as I can, cracking the bone. He yelps and tries to dance back, but I hold onto his hand and beat his arm with my fist till it breaks. Then I let him spin away, wounded. We're in a hall, my soldiers sprawled around him. I shout the rest back and heft my sling blade. Mercury is a cherub of a man, small, squat, with a face like a baby. His cheeks flush rosy. He's been drinking. His coiled golden hair droops over his eyes. He flips it back. I remember how he had wanted to pick me for his house, but his drafters had objected. Now he flourishes his razor like a poet with a quill, but his offhand is useless after I've punched it.
"You're a wild one," he says through the pain.
"You should have picked me for your house."
"I told them not to push you. But did they listen? No, 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 no. Silly Apollo. Pride can blind."
"So can swords."
"Through the eye."
Mercury looks at my armor.
"Dead, then."
Someone shouts for me to kill him.
My, my. They are hungry. This duel may be fun.
I bow. Mercury curtsies. I like this proctor.
but I also don't want him to kill me with that razor. So I sheathe my sword and shoot him in the chest with my pulse fist, set to stun. Then we tie him up. He's still laughing. But farther down the hall behind him, I see Jupiter, a god of a man in full armor, storming forth with a crooked pulse shaft and a razor. Another armored proctor is with him. Minerva, I think. We retreat. Still, they decimate my force. They come at us straight on in the long hall, knocking boys and girls down like boulders rolling through grain. We can't hurt them. My soldiers scamper back the way we came, back up the stairways, back to the higher levels, where we run over new packs of reinforcements. We scramble over each other, falling on the marble floor, running through golden suites to flee Jupiter and Minerva as they come up the stairs. Jupiter bellows laughter as our simple swords and spears ping off his armor. Only my weapons can hurt him. They aren't enough. Jupiter's razor goes through my pulse shield and slips my recoil armor on the thigh. I hiss with pain and shoot the pulse fist at him. His shield takes the pulse and holds, but barely. He flicks a razor at me like a whip. It grazes my eyelid, nearly taking my eye. Blood sheets from the small wound, and I roar in anger. I fly at him, past Minerva, breaking my pulse fist against his jaw. It ruins my weapon and my fist, but it dents his golden helmet and sends him reeling. I don't give him time to recover. I scream and hack in swirling arcs with my sling blade, even as I stab clumsily with my razor. It's a mad dance. I take him through the knee with the unfamiliar razor. He cuts open my thigh with his own. The armor closes around the wound, compressing it and administering painkillers. We're at the end of a circular stairwell as I push him back. His long blade goes limp, then slithers around my leg like a lasso, about to constrict and slice my leg off at the hip. I push fast as I can into him. We go down the stairs. Then he rolls up and stands. I tackle him backward, armor on armor. We smash into a hollow immersion room. Sparks fly. I keep screaming and pushing so he cannot rip off my leg with the razor, still limp and looped around flesh and bone. He's backpedaling, off balance when I take him through a window, and we spill out into the open air. Neither of us have grav boots, so we plummet 100 feet into a snowbank on the mountain's side. We roll down the steep slope towards the 1 mile drop, toward the flowing Argos. I catch myself in the snow. I manage to stand. I can't see him. I think I hear his grunt in the distance. We're both muddled in the clouds. I crouch and listen, but my hearing still hasn't recovered from Apollo.
"You'll die for this, little boy," Jupiter says.
It comes as if from underwater.
Where is he?
Should have learned your place. Everything has an order. You're near the top, but you are not the top, little boy.
I say something pithy about merit not meaning much.
You can't spend merit.
So the governor is paying you to do this.
I hear a howl in the distance.
My shadow. What do you think you're going to do, little boy? Going to kill all us proctors? Going to make us let you win? It's not the way things work, little boy.
Jupiter looks for me.
Soon the governor's crows will come in their ships, with their swords and guns. The real soldiers, little boy. The ones who have scars you can't dream of. The obsidians, led by golden legates and knights. You're just playing. But they'll think you've gone mad. And they will take you. And hurt you. And kill you.
Not if I win before they get here.
That is the key to everything.
There may be a delay on the hollows before the drafters see them. But how long a delay? Who is editing the gory damn hollows while you fight? We'll make sure the right message gets out. I take my red sweatband off my head and dab away the sweat on my face, then wrap it around my head once more. Jupiter is silent.
So, the drafters will see this conversation. They will see that the governor is paying you to cheat. They will see that I am the first student to invade Olympus in history. And they will see me cut you down and take your armor and parade you naked through the snow if you surrender. If not, I will throw your corpse from Olympus and piss golden showers down after you. The clouds clear, and Jupiter stands before me in the white. Red drips from his golden armor. He is tall, lean, violent. This place is his home. It is his playground. The children his playthings, till they get their scars. He is like any other petty tyrant of history, a slave to his own whims, a master of nothing but selfishness. He